History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold, and they don't have to go untold if we'll just take the initiative to ask a few questions and take the time to patiently listen to what comes back our way. We may just end up amazed by what we learn. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we really are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today's program was recorded at the National Museum of World War II Aviation in Colorado Springs, Colorado. You'll hear more about that very special place in our next episode, and I have a link to the museum up for you at hometownheroesradio.com. But today we're going to get to know an ex-prisoner of war who enjoys spending time at the museum and definitely enjoys the historic flight-worthy aircraft there. 96-year-old Bill Roach of Colorado Springs has quite a story. Shot down twice in 9 missions as a B-17 gunner, a prisoner of war held by the USSR, not Germany, and those were just the early stages of an Air Force career that lasted nearly 33 years. Believe it or not, even then he wasn't done serving our country, but let's go back to the beginning. Growing up in Lexington, Kentucky, Bill, with a brother and 3 sisters, what do you remember about those early years?
Well, this was during the Depression, and my family was very poor. My dad was a mechanic, and of course he lost his job right in the middle of the Depression. It was difficult growing up, but we didn't lack in food or anything like that, and it was a happy time, I thought, despite the fact that we didn't have anything like they have today. I mean, we used to sit out front in front of the house and watch cars go by with out-of-state license plates at the counter. To count the plates, and we were outdoors all the time. You know, there was no air conditioning or anything like that, so it was a different life than the kids have today. Of course, I went to a boys' school, so I didn't get involved in any athletics. There were only 50 boys in my school. My graduating class had 8.
Wow. And that was Lexington Latin School?
Lexington Latin School. They concentrated on Latin and Greek and German, and I had a lot of languages. I guess that's the reason I ended up teaching Russian there.
Yeah, right here in Colorado Springs at the U.S. Air Force Academy.
I ended up with an M.A. from Columbia University, and that's how I had that when the academy was open, when they opened up, so I was able to come straight out here and teach. I didn't have to go to graduate school or anything.
But there's a lot you had to survive before that. I am curious, though, when you were that young man in Lexington, was there a dream or ambition that you had as a boy that you said, hey, when I grow up, here's what Bill is going to do?
Well, it certainly had nothing to do with flying. I wasn't going to be a gunner. I might have wanted to be a pilot, which is actually the way I came in the service to try to be a pilot, but ended up getting declassified instead of classified when I went down to Nashville. Of course, that's jumping the gun a little too, so that's after I went into the Air Force.
And you graduated high school at 15?
Well, that's because I graduated in June. My birthday was in November, so I graduated when I was 15, yeah.
And this is 1940?
40. I went to work for a Lafayette hotel. I was working in as a clerk in the hotel, handing out keys and checking mail for people and stuff like that. And then they built the Avon Signal Depot in Lexington. It was an Army signal place, and I got a job out there as a GS-1. My brother went into the Air Force in 42 on my 18th birthday when I was, and actually it was November 42, is when I took my physical for the Air Force. Patriotism in those days was a real thing. I mean, they really were patriotic and wanted to get into it, you know, when they found out that we'd been attacked.
So your brother goes in. What was it?
He goes in, and he went into aviation cadets, and he didn't make it. He had got air sick and everything, and he ended up up at Scott Field on radio school, ground radio. But then when he went overseas, he wasn't even involved with anything as far as the combat was concerned. He was a clerk in a maintenance place.
And you thought, hey, being a pilot sounds fun.
Yeah, I went in the same way he did about a year later, and whereas he went to Miami Beach for his base sick, I went to Keesler.
Tell everybody where that is, for those who don't know.
Well, down in Biloxi, Mississippi, where in the summertime it's 100 degrees and 100 humidity. And then there, you never change your fatigues. Your fatigues are soaking wet all day and all night. And you get heat rash. And when I left there, and we went from there to Elon College. They had a college training detachment thing before you went into cadets.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Elon College in North Carolina. Of course, I had the heat rash the whole time I was in Elon. And from there, we went down to Nashville, Tennessee, where they had classification. They were going to determine whether you're going to be a pilot, a bombardier, or a navigator. They didn't say anything about gunners. And so 50 of us went down to Nashville, and 42 of us became gunners. This was right at the time when they were losing a lot of B-17s and B-24s. And every time they lost a B-17, they lost two pilots, but they lost five gunners. So they needed gunners, and they washed us out. We never got a chance to get into flying school.
And when that happened, when they said, sorry, 42 of you guys, you're going
to
be gunners.
The thing that really irritated me was that I went to they interview you down there in Nashville, and they say this is a psychological test, you know, except that my guy that interviewed me was a dentist. He asked me something about it. He says, if you wash out as a pilot, he says, do you want to stay in combat and be a gunner and everything? I said, no, I don't want to stay. I said, I want to be a pilot. I said, I don't want to be a gunner. He said, well, what would you rather be if you did wash out? And I said, well, my brother's in radio school up in Scott Field. I said, I'd be a radio operator. Well, the next thing I know, I'm washed out.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of flying or something like that, he put on my report. He's afraid to fly.
Because you said you didn't want to be a gunner.
Because I didn't want to be a gunner. I wanted to be a pilot.
Uh-huh. You know?
Anyway, that changed my whole career. So I went from there to, they sent me to armament school up at Buckley. So I went to Buckley Field, got there in January 44, went through armament school. One of my instructors was John Payne. He was a movie actor back in the 40s and 50s. Mm. Even after the war, he was still a movie actor. And he was a PT instructor. And we had some pretty well-known, Danny Murtaugh, who was a baseball player at that time and big league ball player.
Uh-huh.
He was one of our PT instructors. And when I finished armament school, they transferred me down to Buckingham Army Air Base, Fort Myers, Florida. And I went through gunnery school down there. That took about 6 or 8 weeks, something like that. That was really an interesting program. We had this skeet range where you're standing in the back of this truck. They've got a circle around you so you don't fall off. And these traps keep coming at you different directions. And you're going around about 20 miles an hour, teach you how to lead the target and that sort of thing. We had a hurricane while I was down there in November 44, a big hurricane. It blew all of our tar paper shacks over.
Oh, my goodness.
But we were all in the hangar. They made us go to the hangars during the night. And then from there, I went over to Plant Park, which was right across the bay there at Tampa. And that's where the crews were formed. And that's where I met the guys I was going to fight with. And then we went over to MacDill Field and did our RTU at MacDill. And that's when we got into the B-17s and started flying B-17s.
What did you think of the B-17?
Well, I liked it. It was a big airplane, and it was kind of rough flying over the Everglades with the heat waves coming up in the plane. And I'm standing in the waist, but I got over that.
Did you feel like all that training prepared you for what you would eventually do?
Well, nothing prepared you for the actual combat, but the training was good, I thought, when you consider the number of people and how little we knew. I'd never been in an airplane before, and I think they did a pretty good job, at least with the gunners. I don't know how they did with the pilots. Some of our pilots and some of our bombardiers and navigators didn't seem to know much about gunnery. Although they went through gunnery school, too, the navigators did, bombardiers.
And when did you go over?
I went over November 44. We were supposed to get an airplane to fly over, but there wasn't any airplane available. Finally, we got aboard a ship going over with a convoy. It was called the Ile-de-France. We had about 10,000 troops on board, including a whole battalion of Canadians. I remember because you could hear over the loudspeaker, they'd say, "Canadian Army, man your brooms." Anyway, it took us 10 days to get over, and we got over there, and then a whole bunch of air crews went over at the same time. And when we got to England, they divided us and sent us to different bomb groups. And they had just had a big battle over Merseburg, and they had a lot of casualties. And so four of our crews went to the 452nd. And then we had to wait. We did some practice flying over there, not much. And then our pilot went on his first mission as a co-pilot to get checked out, got shot down on his first mission.
Oh, my goodness.
This was during the Battle of the Bulge. And uh-huh. It was in December. He was in somewhere in Belgium or someplace for about a week. They crash-landed right in the middle of the Battle of the Bulge during a blizzard, and they got back to England. Nobody was killed or hurt or anything. But they stayed with the airplane for 3 days in this blizzard.
Wow. So
they said the Army gave them 3 rifles and said, "You guys are on your own."
Oh, my.
And left them there in the plane for 3 days. Well, they finally got back to England. And then when we got back, he had to get checked out again. So we got a little further. And we flew our first mission, first part of January. I've got my mission. I only flew 9 missions. So we got shot down on the 6th of February, which I think was our 6th mission.
Well, tell me about your first mission. Because here you've done all this training. You've been, you know, going through all these things. And now you finally fly a bombing mission as a waste gunner on a B-17. What was that first experience like?
Well, it was kind of scary because we didn't know what was going on, but it wasn't a particularly tough mission. All of our missions were in Germany, and we flew to Rhein, R-H-E-I-N-E. We flew to Augsburg. We flew to Hohenbudberg, which was in the Ruhr Valley. We flew to Munich, Nuremberg twice, Chemnitz, Berlin. Berlin was our last mission.
And I'm sure by this time, I mean the very fact that you're there is a reflection that they've lost a lot of air crews. So yeah, you're somewhat aware of the hazards that you're going to be dealing with?
Well, you know how many men my bomb group lost?
How many?
We lost 497 killed.
Wow.
And more than that, POWs. We had 2 Medal of Honor winners in my bomb group. Of course, they both were killed. Metzger and Gott, they were killed in November 44.
But you're aware, as a 20-year-old kid flying in World War II, that there are a lot of things that could end your life in a hurry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had guys in my barracks that take off one day, and the next day they're gone, you know. On Christmas Eve, we had a mission, I think, 24th of December. And when we got in my barracks, it got killed. And another guy got a piece of flak in his chest. He survived, but he ended up in the hospital.
Well, and you mentioned a second ago that your pilot, you had to wait for him because he was shot down during the Battle of the Bulge. December 24th, 44 is right in the middle of the Battle of the Bulge. Yeah. That's the first day they could actually fly to support those troops in Bastogne.
That's right, yeah.
So you guys were part of that.
Yeah, oh yeah. Matter of fact, that's what this French Legion of Honor was based on, participating in the Ardennes battle.
That French Legion of Honor medal is the latest addition to this retired Air Force colonel's decorations, which also include the Legion of Merit from our government. It's time for our first break, but when we come back, details from the 2 crash landings Bill survived after being shot down, and his time as a prisoner of war. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties, over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.